Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, March 14, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Federal Investigation, Men Suspects in Two Bombings, Possession of Fully Automatic Gun Used for Initial Arrest, Three Charged in Minnesota for Mosque Attack, by Mary Schenck, Urbana. Four Ford County men are in federal custody for possession of a machine gun, a charge intended to hold them while the government seeks additional charges that allegedly link three of them to a mosque bombing in Minnesota and the attempted bombing of a women's health clinic in Champaign last year. The four are Michael Harry, 47, Michael McWhorter, 29, Joe Morris, 22, and Ellis E.J. Mack, 18, all of Clarence, a small community in southeastern Ford County, about 35 miles north of Urbana. Harry, a former Ford County Sheriff's deputy and one-time Libertarian candidate for sheriff, is believed to have been the leader of a homegrown domestic terrorism group to which the other men belonged. In a hearing Tuesday afternoon, Magistrate Judge Eric Long remarked that the weight of the evidence is fairly strong and ordered Harry held until trial. Both Harry and Morris made initial appearances, while McWhorter and Mack are supposed to be in court today. As authorities of the Central District of Illinois were announcing their arrest, federal prosecutors in the District of Minnesota were following suit, revealing that Harry, Morris, and McWhorter have been charged in a criminal complaint that the state with arson for the August 5, 2017 firebombing of the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota. A 15-page probable cause affidavit in support of their arrests linked the men to the mosque bombing during early morning prayers while people were present, as well as the November 7 attempted firebombing of the women's health practice at 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. In the Minnesota explosion, five men were in the mosque about 5 a.m. when a bomb exploded, doing extensive damage to the building but apparently not injuring any people. In the Champaign bombing attempt, an employee arrived for work about 7:30 a.m. November 7, discovered a broken window, and found a piece of PVC pipe with thermite, a pyrotechnic compound, inside. The pipe had duct tape on one end and a plastic cap on the other. A bomb technician concluded the device found in a surgical room with oxygen tanks was intended to burn. However, it did not. Among the highlights of the detail-filled affidavit, in late December, Ford County Sheriff Mark Doran provided photos to the FBI that he had received from a confidential source showing weapons and bomb-making supplies in the Paxton home of Harry's parents, with whom Harry frequently stays because his own home in Clarence was said not to have running water or electricity. In late January, a second confidential source provided authorities with information that Harry, McWhorter, and Morris were responsible for the mosque and health clinic bombings. The source told FBI agents that Harry had recruited him to be part of his group and that the source had seen fully automatic illegal firearms, video jammers, and Tannerite, a brand of exploding target used for firearms practice, locked in a safe in Harry's office in Clarence. The source heard Morris talk about throwing a black powder pipe bomb at the Bloomington Mosque. Morris allegedly said Harry was to pay them $18,000 for their participation in the bombing. Morris also told the source that he made and placed the incendiary device at the women's clinic, but it did not go off. With information from the source, authorities learned that Harry had rented a black truck in Champaign on July 27 that was returned to Champaign on August 6, the day after the Bloomington Mosque bombing. The truck, similar to the one seen on video leaving the mosque parking lot just after the bombing, had more than 3,000 miles on it. Round-trip distance from Champaign to Bloomington, Minnesota is about 1,040 miles. Guns. Two are semi-auto and one is fully auto. In mid-February, the source provided FBI agents with pictures of items in Harry's parents' garage, including a photo of the Anarchist's Handbook, which has instructions on how to make bombs. The photos also showed tools such as a drill that could be used to make pipe bombs. A few days later, February 19, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives received an anonymous tip that there were explosive devices in a shed on Main Street in Clarence. The residents living there consented to a search. In their shed, authorities found multiple explosive devices that the occupants said they had no idea were there and that they suspected Harry had placed there. Harry is currently charged in Ford County Circuit Court with the assault of the man on whose property the devices were found. That stemmed from an incident in July 2017 in which Harry allegedly argued with the man and held a pellet gun to the man's head. Harry was arrested Tuesday morning as he made his way to a court appearance in Paxton on that case. On February 27, during a canvass of Harry's neighborhood, agents found four shotguns and four assault rifles in a camouflage bag, a hard gun case, a green plate carrier with soft armor, and a bandolier with several 12-gauge bullets at the home of McWhorter's brother. Three of the four assault rifles were found to be fully automatic, meeting the definition of a machine gun. The brother told police that Harry and Morris had dropped off a bag at his home a few days earlier. He said Harry told him police would probably want to talk to him, Harry, and asked the brother if he would hold the guns until after that happened. As police were interviewing the brother February 27, Harry arrived at the home asking to speak to the brother. Agents turned him away. The brother also told agents that on prior occasions, he was at Harry's office when Harry asked him if he wanted to see science stuff and showed him a piece of braided wire that, when combined with a fluid, burned for a few minutes. On a different occasion, Harry reportedly showed him containers of liquid and powder that Harry claimed were supposed to burn really hot when added to fire. And on yet another occasion, the brother saw Harry cleaning some of the same weapons taken from his house February 27. Harry asked him not to tell anyone about them because they are lightly modified. Two are semi-auto and one is fully auto. Mosque intent: scare them out of the country. On March 10, McWhorter was interviewed by an FBI agent and denied knowledge of explosive or incendiary devices, but said he knew of four shotguns and assault rifles belonging to Harry. He knew three of them to be illegal and admitted that he helped Harry drill an assault rifle to make it capable of shooting fully automatic. McWhorter said Hari instructed him how to do it, and the work was done in Hari's parents' garage. McWhorter told agents that he, Hari, Morris, and Mac all knew the weapons were fully automatic because they had fired them outside of Paxton. The weapons were stored in a vault in Hari's office in Clarence. McWhorter admitted taking the guns to his brother's house in a camouflage bag and a black plastic case. McWhorter admitted he helped in the attempted bombing of the women's health practice in Champaign in November. He said he, Hari, and Morris were in a truck that Hari rented in Champaign, and that the device they used had been made in Clarence by Hari. McWhorter confirmed that it was Morris who was dropped off in the middle of the night, and that Morris smashed the window and threw the device in. McWhorter also admitted taking part in the August bombing of the Bloomington, Minnesota mosque. He said he, Hari, and Morris drove there in a truck rented in Champaign, and that each had specific roles. Hari was the driver. Morris broke the window with a sledgehammer, and McWhorter threw the bomb in and fled before it exploded. McWhorter claimed it was Hari's idea to target the mosque, not intending to kill anyone, but to scare them, Muslims, out of the country. McWhorter also admitted that he, Hari, Morris, and Mac participated in a home invasion in Indiana in December 2017, intending to rob as a Hispanic drug dealer of cash while posing as police with a search warrant. They had the automatic weapons but did not get cash from the man. McWhorter also said the group committed 3 Walmart robberies in Illinois, and that he, Hari, and Morris planted the explosive devices on Hari's neighbor's property that police found in the shed February 19. Interviewed separately from McWhorter on March 10, Mac admitted he shot the automatic weapons outside of Paxton, admitted participating in a home invasion in Indiana, and was provided with a 12-gauge shotgun to use during it. Mac also admitted participating in a Walmart attempted robbery that he said happened in Mattoon, but agents said matched a report they had received from a Walmart in Mount Vernon. Hari has a storied history in Ford County, including a 2005 conviction for abducting his own children. Assistant U.S. Attorney Jason Bohm told Long that the government wanted all 4 men detained pending trial, and that a grand jury is expected to meet in early April to indict the group. Gun law protest. Students can join walkout without fear. Colleges, local schools back peaceful protest. By Lindsay Jones. Higher education officials across the state took to Twitter in recent days to reassure students who choose to leave school for today's national walkout that any punishment received won't affect college admissions. The University of Illinois, Eastern Illinois, Illinois State, and Illinois Wesleyan joined institutions across the nation in letting students know their admissions packets would not be viewed any differently should they be disciplined for protesting peacefully. Future Illini, we support students engaging in dialogue that further informs their worldview, the U of I said in a tweet. Non-academic disciplinary action as a result of participating in peaceful protest won't affect a student's admission decision. ISU took a similar stance, tweeting, Illinois State University would like to assure high school students that disciplinary action associated with their participation in peaceful protests will not impact their admission to the university in any way. The statements came after students across the nation, including many in Champaign, Urbana, and surrounding communities, pledged to walk out of their schools at 10 a.m. today and remain outside and protest peacefully for 17 minutes. They'll do so in memoriam of the 17 people who died in the February 14 shooting at a Parkland, Florida high school, and in protest of congressional inaction regarding gun laws. Officials in the Champaign and Urbana school districts have reassured students that if they conduct themselves peacefully, there will be no severe punishments, including suspensions, if they choose to walk out. In Unit 4, officials told students there wouldn't be a consequence if they walk out, since the normal punishment of social probation wouldn't apply during the next week's spring break. Urbana students were also informed they would not face disciplinary consequences if their behavior remained peaceful. This included University Laboratory High School, which in an email added that faculty who participated would also not be penalized. There will be no academic or disciplinary consequences for students or faculty who participate in this brief exercise, Uni High administrators stated. As a school, we also want to support students and teachers who do not choose to walk out. There will be teachers and administrators in the building to supervise and support them. Sophomore Salma El-Nagar said students at Uni came together quickly after the Parkland shooting to organize their part of the walkout, driven by frustration that yet another mass shooting occurred at a school. "It is so common and easy for students our age to get a gun," she said. "It's really terrifying." Edison student under investigation for threat. A student who made threats against Edison Middle School will not be allowed to attend school today after Champaign police and school administrators were made aware of the threat. According to police, the student sent a private message to a friend group on Snapchat that although intended as a joke, was threatening in nature. District officials said via social media that the student was removed from the school and moved to the Youth Assessment Center for further evaluation. A police investigation is still ongoing. The message mentioned a threat during today's National Student Walkout, which organizers say is intended to be a peaceful protest that begins at 10 a.m. and lasts 17 minutes, 1 minute for each victim of the February 14 mass shooting at a high school in Parkland, Florida. "Given the heightened awareness surrounding school safety, any threat we receive will be taken seriously, whether large or small, direct or indirect, intentional or sent as a joke," Unit 4 said in a Facebook post. That article by Lindsay Jones. Chapter 11 Bankruptcy. Habeco hopes to find a buyer at auction. By Ben Zichterman, Champaign. Having filed for bankruptcy protection in January, Habeco plans to auction its assets March 26th in Chicago in a bid to find a buyer. The hobby product distributor, which employs more than 300 people in the county, placed ads Wednesday in the News Gazette and USA Today with notices of the auction as required by bankruptcy process. In the past couple of days, former employees also told the News Gazette they had received notices about the auction. "I will have a press release for you tomorrow morning as well, so that you have an official statement from us," Human Resources Director Howard Salazar wrote in an email Tuesday. When Habeco filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, it said it added too much debt and faced an increasingly competitive industry, market headwinds, and a series of one-off events with key suppliers. It also said that it had an estimated 200 to 999 creditors, $10 million to $50 million in assets, and $100 million to $500 million in liabilities. In recent court documents, Habeco also indicated it had $114 million in revenue in 2017, down from $175 million in 2016. Habeco asked for a minimum bid for all the assets at $38 million, or less than that for different parts of the business, according to court documents, and that any successful bid complete its purchase by April 5. In bankruptcy court filings, Habeco's lawyers have said they are hoping for a stalking horse buyer, and the company's investment banker, Lincoln Partners Advisors, has contacted 432 potentially interested parties, of which 184 entered into confidentiality agreements. A meaningful number of those indicated interest in substantially all the assets of the debtors or material business units of the debtors, attorney Matthew Talmo wrote. Based on discussions with various of the proposed purchasers described below, the debtors believe that prior to the proposed auction described below, they may be able to enter into one or more agreements for the going concern sale of the assets with one or more potential purchasers. In stalking horse bids, the seller provides certain incentives and protections to a potential buyer, the stalking horse, to essentially set the floor of the auction bidding. Habeco was formed in 1985 when Clint Atkins combined Don Anderson's Great Plains Model Distributors and Bruce Holichek's Tower Hobbies. It is one of the largest hobby product distributors in the country. It has employees around the country at various locations, including more than 300 at its headquarters at 2904 Research Road, Champaign. Court report. Two sentenced to prison for a quad attack. 13-year-old will be held till he's 21. 19-year-old gets 12 years, one more awaiting sentencing. By Mary Shank Urbana. A 19-year-old and 13-year-old accused in the vicious mugging of a University of Illinois student near the quad earlier this year have been sentenced to prison. Isaiah Conley, 19, of Urbana, the oldest of the four accused in the attack, and the only one to be charged as an adult, pleaded guilty Monday before Judge Roger Weber to attempted armed robbery and was sentenced to 12 years in prison. He had no prior convictions. Meantime, on Tuesday, Judge Tom DeFanis sentenced the youngest of the group, a 13-year-old from Urbana, to the Department of Juvenile Justice for 15 years, or until his 21st birthday. He had also pleaded guilty in juvenile court to attempted armed robbery. On Monday, DeFanis sentenced a 16-year-old involved in the attack to juvenile prison. A fourth juvenile has also pleaded guilty to attempted armed robbery, but is awaiting sentencing. All have admitted taking part in a January 7 attack on a male student who was walking alone about 5:40 p.m. between the Illinois Union and Altgelt Hall. The four teens surrounded him, and one of the 16-year-olds hit him in the face with a brick. State's attorney Julia Reitz said the group's plan was to knock him out and rob him of cash so they could party. When the victim, whose cheekbone was broken, did not lose consciousness, the panicked teens ran without getting anything from him. After the 13-year-old pleaded guilty in early February, DeFanis allowed him to be released to his mother while he awaited sentencing. But on March 6, Reed said the boy stole an airsoft pellet gun from the Meijer in Urbana and posted pictures of himself on Instagram, holding it as if it were a real weapon. She said he was having a dispute with another juvenile and was trying to intimidate him. He pleaded guilty Tuesday to burglary in connection with that, admitting he entered Meijer intending to steal. Reitz also had Champaign Police Officer Austin Massey testify about a December 13 incident in which the boy was detained after being found on an MTD bus with a pellet gun. Massey said police had been called to Marketplace Mall because concerned shoppers saw a young man wearing a mask talking to another young man about shooting someone in the children's play area. The witnesses saw one of the young men with what they believed was a gun. With the help of a mall security officer, police learned that the boys had gotten on a bus, which was later stopped. The youth involved in the quad attack was identified as the one at the mall. He had the pellet gun and two credit cards believed to be stolen on him. Assistant Public Defender Katie Jessup had the boy's father, who lives in Georgia, testify that he was willing to have his son live with him. Reitz asked DeFanis to sentence the boy to prison, calling the attack on the U of I student very serious. She called the mall victims terrorized at seeing someone with a gun. Reitz said she respected the boy's father for his offer, but said the child's issues are far too significant to simply allow him to move away from them. Jessup urged the judge to consider probation, given the boy's supportive family and his young age. She said his use of cannabis and willingness to follow others were among his weaknesses. DeFanis noted that the youth's atrocious behavior when he first entered detention in January improved over the weeks, which moved him to release the boy after his guilty plea. But the judge said the boy's willingness to threaten someone with a realistic-looking pellet gun could result in tragic consequences to him. He runs the risk of someone deciding to get even and just shoot him, DeFanis said, adding the boy's mother and father have tried to appropriately parent him, but he has taken it upon himself to do everything he can to thwart their best efforts. Go figure, a numerical look at local headlines. 11 days left to order a sparkling raspberry margarita with your Grinco Taco at Wedge. Citing competition from food trucks, the owner of the downtown Champaign Tequila Bar and Grill says he'll close it on March 25. Things have changed dramatically downtown, owner Victor Fuentes told News Gazette Media's Ben Zichterman. There's about three or four different Mexican concept food trucks who are downtown often, and they're direct competitors. They don't serve liquor, but food trucks was one of the factors. Wedge opened in 2012 at 415 North Neal Street in the old Carmon space. He said business has been okay, but not as good as it was the first years. Wedge has about 13 employees, said Fuentes, who runs several restaurants in the area, including El Toro, V. Picasso, and The Wheelhouse. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, March 14, 2018. Please stay tuned.